Eddie, the Collegiate Sophomore. Chapter 7. Spring Semester, Part 2. Monday morning, Provost Layton returns and gets the rundown of the last week from Mr. Fraser before practice. Provost Layton is glad to see that McCutcheon is gone, primarily because he really brought no value to the team. Upon hearing that Dean Grimsby tried to place Kathy on disciplinary probation for defending herself against McCutcheon, Provost Layton assured Mr. Fraser that will not happen. Provost Layton also assured Mr. Fraser that, if Dean Grimsby pursues the issue, she will just overrule everything he does, and there's nothing that anyone can do about it. With the team assembled on the bleachers, Mr. Fraser walks in with Provost Layton and Dr. Bonomo. Mr. Fraser opens by telling everyone that was a great meet this weekend. Every one of you are to be congratulated. And everyone's performance is the best it's ever been. The team cheers, Mr. Fraser grins, and continues, hopefully, this week we can all get some track and field training in and skip the wrestling matches. But I got rid of that problem. So maybe now we can move forward. The team laughs, knowing that Mr. Fraser is referring to McCutcheon. Getting right down to business, Mr. Fraser tells the field athletes to follow Dr. Bonomo outside. As Mr. Fraser remains inside for a moment and addresses the track athletes, Paula whispers to Kathy, "This is going to sound weird, but there's trouble coming again." Kathy looks around, seeing no immediate trouble, wonders if Paula is not just stressed out. Kathy whispers to Paula, "Well, at least the trouble can't be McCutcheon, since he'll never run again, so they say." Paula whispers back, "Yeah, I know. McCutcheon is what Erica would call an easy takedown." Mr. Fraser finishes up his brief talk, and the track athletes get up and head out to the track. As Kathy and Paula walk through the door, continuing their conversation, someone suddenly grabs Kathy's arm as she exits the building and yanks her aside. Kathy screams, gaining the attention of everyone around. The person tells Kathy, "We need to have a talk." After a very brief struggle, Kathy manages to break away from her attacker, but it doesn't matter. Eddie was not far behind her, and, lifting Kathy's adversary into the air, body slams him onto the ground with more force than anyone could imagine. Eddie walks Kathy aside, joined by the tribe, and asks, "Are you okay, sweetie?" Kathy exclaims, "Yeah, I'm okay. But someone else isn't going to be okay in a minute. What was that all about?" Chatter rises among the team, with everyone wondering what just happened. Eddie gives Kathy a hug, not realizing that Kathy's adversary has gotten up and is headed straight for Kathy again. Mark intercepts the attacker who, in turn, attacks Mark. The attacker fights Mark, but Mark proceeds to relentlessly mess with him. The attacker tries to strike Mark, but Mark evades his every move, getting a few jabs in. Braden tells everyone, "Stand back. Everybody, please stand back." Braden is looking for an opening to break up the fight and apprehend the attacker, albeit not moving very quickly to do so. The attacker tries to headbutt Mark, who has now had enough. Mark throws the perpetrator to the ground and grabs him by the ankles and spins him around. Braden, knowing exactly what is coming, steps inside the building for a moment. Everyone else stands clear as an opening forms in one direction. Mark releases Kathy's attacker, who flies through the air and is promptly greeted by a group of thorny rose bushes. Seeing the landing, Johnson exclaims, "Great shot." Hearing the commotion, Mr. Fraser breaks through the crowd, telling Provost Layton, "Not this shit again. I thought this was all over with." Mr. Fraser, who arrived just in time to see Kathy's attacker fly through the air, exclaims, "Ouch," seeing the man lying in the middle of the rose bushes. Provost Layton exclaims, "That must have hurt." Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Well, let's go and try to sort this one out." Kathy, recognizing her attacker as Scott McCutcheon Sr., walks over to where he is laying in the bushes, and proceeds to kick him in the ass, exclaiming, "You piece of shit." No one dares to stop Kathy, not even Mr. Fraser, who now recognizes the attacker. Braden returns from his locker, where he retrieved his handcuffs, walking up as Kathy finishes up kicking the shit out of another member of the McCutcheon family. Braden drags Scott McCutcheon Sr. out of the bushes by his feet and turns him face down on the ground, placing him in handcuffs. Braden announces, "Scott McCutcheon Sr., you are under arrest for assault." The crowd cheers as Braden informs Scott McCutcheon Sr. of his rights. As Braden picks Mr. McCutcheon off the ground, he tells Mr. Fraser, "I'm sorry. It looks like I'm gonna miss practice today. I gotta take out the trash." Mr. Fraser tells Braden, "Don't worry about it. It looks like you're saving me the problem of dealing with this." Braden takes McCutcheon Sr. away, who looks like he was on the losing end of a bull fight. And as Braden takes Mr. McCutcheon away, Kathy tells him, "Don't forget to call Richard." Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton pull Kathy, Mark, and Eddie aside. Paula, Johnson, and a few others join them. Mr. Fraser asks, "What was that all about?" Kathy explains, "He grabbed my arm and pulled on it. He said, 'We need to have a talk.'" Eddie adds, "He wouldn't let Kathy go, so I picked him up and body slammed him." Mr. Fraser asks Mark, "How did you get involved?" Mark explains, "After Eddie body slammed him, he got up and was headed straight on for Kathy again. I intercepted him and tried to block him, and he started to fight with me. So, I was messing with him, trying to keep him away from Kathy. Then, he tried to headbutt me, so I thought I'd try him out as a hammer and flung him around. It's too bad that the bushes got in the way." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "What's really too bad is that Dr. Bonomo wasn't here to see that." Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "It's a good thing that Axel Braden was here. This sounds like law enforcement's problem anyway. So, we'll just let them deal with it." Mr. Fraser, glad to hear that, replies, "That's fine with me. We have work to do. We have the divisional meet coming up soon, and we can't afford to waste our time on shit like this." Provost Layton replies, "I totally agree, George." Provost Layton asks the group, "Let me ask this. Who made the first aggressive physical contact?" Kathy replies, "Scott McCutcheon." A few others back up Kathy, stating that they also saw it. Mark adds, "And when Eddie stopped him, he started it up again. I had to stop him." Provost Layton informs Mr. Fraser, "Well, this is not our problem." Everyone was certainly glad to hear that. The team heads to the track, ready to burn off the excess adrenaline they've just acquired. After practice, as everyone is headed back to the locker rooms, Officer Braden is outside the arena discussing the incident with Officer Hayes, who just arrived. Officer Braden informs Officer Hayes that Scott McCutcheon Sr. is under arrest, in the campus jail, and screaming like a madman. Officer Braden also informs Officer Hayes that he plans to have Scott McCutcheon Sr. transported to the hospital to get checked out, just to get rid of him. Seeing Officer Hayes, Kathy, Eddie, Mark, and their coaches join the conversation. After a brief hello, Officer Hayes asks, "Okay. What happened here?" Kathy explains, "That piece of shit grabbed my arm and said we need to have a talk. I broke away from him, and Eddie body slammed him." Officer Hayes asks, "Then, what happened?" Mark explains, "That guy went after Kathy again, so I intercepted him. He started a fight with me, so I messed with him. Then, he tried to headbutt me, so I tried him out as a hammer." Officer Braden adds, "That's when I stepped in and arrested him." Mr. Fraser then informs Officer Hayes, "After Braden arrested Scott McCutcheon Sr., we all went out to the track to practice. I thought I left this kind of nonsense behind at the high school." Officer Hayes tells Mr. Fraser, "It appears that the nonsense has hit a whole new level." Mr. Fraser explains to Officer Hayes, I can't have anyone attacking my team. We stand an excellent chance of winning every single gold medal in the upcoming divisional meet, and I can't afford to have any of my athletes sidelined. Officer Hayes asks, so, you still think the team will win every gold medal in the divisional meet? Mr. Fraser replies, based upon the team's performance so far this year, it sure looks that way. We're planning on it, and that's the team's goal. Wondering why Scott McCutcheon Sr. was even at the university, Officer Hayes asks, let me ask everyone this. Can anyone tell me why this McCutcheon character was even on the campus? Mr. Fraser explains, yes. This probably has something to do with his son, Todd McCutcheon, ramming a baton into Kathy's rear end during practice a while back. Kathy kicked the shit out of Todd, and now they are claiming that Todd will never run again. Apparently, the father had some words to exchange with Kathy. I don't know what it is with Todd McCutcheon. He's totally incompetent on the track, yet his father and Dean Grimsby, for some reason, want him on the team. After obtaining a few statements, Officer Hayes tells Officer Braden, have this McCutcheon character shipped to the county hospital. Inform them that he's under arrest, and we'll pick him up when he's discharged. Recalling an instance when Paul Mahoney was taken away, Kathy suggests, are you sure you don't want him to take the bus to the booby hatch? Officer Hayes laughs, telling Kathy, at the rate things are going with these McCutcheon characters, that might not be a bad idea. Having gathered all the information he needs, Officer Hayes heads out, and everyone else heads to their next destination. The day of the spring divisional meet arrives, and it is unlikely that any of the university's athletes are in on the gambling operation. Technically on the injured reserve list after Kathy took him out, McCutcheon is sitting in the stands today along with his father and older brother. Also in the stands are President Caldwell, Dr. Karakova, Dean Grimsby, and a few other administrators in their special VIP seating area. Former coach Herndon was invited to sit with the administrators today and is seated along with them. Today, Provost Layton is not among the spectators, but rather will be alongside Mr. Fraser and Dr. Bonamo, coaching the team. The team gathers in the indoor arena before they head out to the stadium. Mr. Fraser confidently walks into the arena, joined by Provost Layton, Dr. Bonamo, and Officer Richard Hayes. Officer Hayes is present today for two reasons. One is to get a first-hand look at the track team in competition. The second is to see what else he can discover regarding the gambling investigation he has been a part of for 2 years. Mr. Fraser gives a brief talk to his team and begins by announcing, I hear a rumor that there is a track meet today. Some of the team members chuckle, but some remain silent. Mr. Fraser continues, I have some good news for all of you. At the end of last week, Dr. Bonamo, Coach Layton, Mrs. Owens, and myself had a meeting. We reviewed your individual statistics, the statistics of the relay teams, and the statistics of the competitors that we have obtained from the other meets this year. Mr. Fraser then raises his voice, exclaiming, we have the potential, as a team, to take every gold medal out there today in the running events and most of the field events. The team cheers wildly, ready for victory. Quoting his favorite Bible verse, Mr. Fraser continues, exclaiming, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you win. Mark my word. There is only one winner. Remember, the one and only attribute that will determine your success today in your event is you must attack your opponent with no fear. No fear. Did you get that? No fear. You all have the ability to take home a medal today. Collectively, as a team, we can take home all the gold medals today. One of the field athletes comments, except for the high jump. Mr. Fraser calmly repeats what he heard, except for the high jump. I see. The best the team was hoping for in the high jump was the bronze medal. Looking around at the athletes, Mr. Fraser exclaims, asking, who here can high jump? Akinmola pipes up, telling his coach, me. I can. Mr. Fraser exclaims, that's right. I remember that from when you were in high school. How high can you jump these days? Akinmola confidently replies, about 7 feet. Sometimes a little more. Mr. Fraser exclaims, 7 feet. Did everyone hear that? Akinmola can high jump 7 feet. Mr. Fraser turns to Dr. Bonomo, telling him, Akinmola is high jumping today. Put him on the official roster. Previously, since Akinmola is part of the distance team, Dr. Paxton would not allow him to high jump. Mr. Fraser concludes, we are now going to walk out to the track with great confidence. We have the ability to take all the gold medals, including the high jump. Just remember, you are the greatest. No one is better at your event than you are. Let's get out there and act like it. Mr. Fraser, along with the other coaches, walks toward the exit, and the team follows. On the way to the track, Kathy tells Eddie, I'm really glad Mr. Fraser is back. Eddie replies, yeah, I agree. He sounds a lot more confident than Dr. Braun. Kathy mentions, Akinmola sounds really confident too. Eddie asks, I wonder what the winning jump in the winter divisional meet was. Kathy replies, somewhere in the upper 6 foot range. If he's jumping anywhere close to 7 feet, he's got a shot at it. Eddie comments, Mr. Fraser might just pull it off and win all the gold medals. Walking out to the track with the coaching staff is Officer Hayes. Curious about Mr. Fraser's earlier comments, Officer Hayes asks Mr. Fraser, are you still that confident that you'll take all the gold medals? Mr. Fraser replies, yes. They can do it. In the last few weeks, they've been more fired up than ever. Coach Layton adds, everyone's performance is the best it's been all year. They've all been working really hard. To Officer Hayes, Mr. Fraser sounds extremely confident. And why shouldn't he? With several athletes delivering world-class performances, there is no reason why the team cannot take all the gold medals today. Officer Hayes excuses himself and mentions that he will meet up with the team later. Arriving at the team bench, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa stretch and warm up. They will be up first in the 100-yard dash preliminaries. Mr. Fraser privately tells the three sprinters, it's no secret we'll take the gold and silver in the 100-yard dash. The bronze is up for debate. Do whatever you have to, but get that Nacho Brooklyn guy out of the competition. That guy is dangerous. He's mentally unfit to compete. Mark replies, that should be easy enough. His brain is already shorted out. Mr. Fraser gives his three top-notch sprinters a fist bump, telling them, good luck. The call is made for the men's 100-yard dash preliminaries. Heading to the starting line, Eddie asks Mark, what's the plan, bro? Mark replies, I don't know yet. I'll figure it out before the final. Already at the starting line, watching carefully as Mark walks up, is Nacho Brooklyn, who plans to win this year. Nacho Brooklyn has been training hard and is ready for today's event. Seeing that Nacho Brooklyn is nervously staring at him, Mark looks around at the officials, finding the head timekeeper, with whom he had a discussion with during the indoor divisional meet earlier this year. Mark walks over to the head timekeeper and asks, hey, do you remember me? The timekeeper replies, oh, yeah. Last January, during the indoor meet. I remember. Mark points at Nacho Brooklyn, telling the head timekeeper, every time I'm up against that crazy guy, he starts something. For effect, Mark waves his hands in the air, telling the head timekeeper, can you guys please keep an eye on him? Pointing directly at Nacho Brooklyn again, Mark tells the head timekeeper, he kind of goes psycho without any warning. The head timekeeper replies, I agree. We've seen it all season. We'll definitely keep a close eye on him. Nacho Brooklyn is keenly aware that Mark is pointing at him and talking about him. The head timekeeper motions for the starter to come over. The starter jogs over and asks, "What's up?" The head timekeeper points to Nacho Brooklyn, telling the starter, "The guy in lane 3 started something with this guy, who will be in lane 5, over the winter. Please keep an eye on the guy in lane 3. He's mentally unstable." For additional effect, Mark points to Nacho Brooklyn, telling the starter and the head timekeeper, "His name is Major Nacho Brooklyn. If you accidentally mispronounce his name, he'll act like a shark at feeding time." Nacho Brooklyn is now very aware that he is being singled out for some reason. The officials reassure Mark that they'll keep an eye on Nacho Brooklyn. Mark walks over to the starting line with the starter. During their walk, Mark stares at Nacho Brooklyn, who is pacing back and forth, wondering what the problem is. Mark, in the first heat, steps behind his blocks in lane 5. Mark whispers to Eddie in lane 4, "I warned the officials about Nacho Brooklyn. He's getting paranoid." Nacho Brooklyn is getting increasingly nervous, pacing back and forth. Eddie whispers to Mark, "He was talking to himself the whole time." Mark whispers back, "Good. He's about to self-destruct." Eddie then whispers to Mark, "Amazon war cry at the gun. Tell Hoffer." Mark walks over to Hoffer, who is in lane 2, and whispers, "Amazon war cry when the gun goes off." As Mark is walking back to his lane, Nacho Brooklyn steps up, shoves Mark, and exclaims, "Are you talking about me? What's your problem?" Mark intentionally falls to the ground, getting up slowly. The head timekeeper runs over, telling Nacho Brooklyn, "You calm down." Nacho Brooklyn exclaims, "That guy is talking about me. You guys are all talking about me." The head timekeeper again tells Nacho Brooklyn, "Calm down. Or I'll have to eject you from the meet." Seeing the opening, Mark tells Eddie, "I think we have a major problem here," emphasizing the word major. Stepping around the officials, Nacho Brooklyn lunges toward Mark, intending to take Mark down. Mark quickly steps aside, exclaiming, "Get that guy out of here. Every meet he starts something. I'm sick of this shit already." The officials again tell Nacho Brooklyn, "You calm down. Control yourself." As he is frantically pacing back and forth, Nacho Brooklyn yells out, "He's messing up my race. He's messing it all up." Mark tells the head timekeeper, "That guy is so full of shit." Mr. Fraser runs over, wondering what all the commotion is about. Mr. Fraser asks, "What's going on here?" The head timekeeper, recognizing Mr. Fraser, explains, "It's the same thing that happened during the last divisional meet." Mr. Fraser calls Mark over and asks, "What happened this time?" Mark explains, "I just told the officials that Nacho Brooklyn, or whatever his name is, always starts something with me, and to keep an eye on him. Then, I whispered to Hoffer, Amazon war cry when the gun goes off. I guess he thought we were talking about him. That guy's a real mental case." Mr. Fraser asks the head timekeeper, begging, "Can you guys please do something about that guy?" The head timekeeper tells Mr. Fraser, "We have a problem with him during every meet. I'll give him a warning. Any other instances, and we'll eject him." Mr. Fraser was hoping that the officials would eject Nacho Brooklyn from the meet. Mark, however, just learned everything he needs to in order to get Nacho Brooklyn ejected. Nacho Brooklyn's coach, Mr. Crumpler, walks over, also wondering what the problem is. Mr. Crumpler asks Nacho Brooklyn, "What's the problem this time?" Pointing at Mark, Nacho Brooklyn exclaims, "He's messing up my race. He's messing it all up again. And he's gonna be messing up my name." Mr. Crumpler tells Nacho Brooklyn, "Just calm down. We've talked about this. Just focus. Breathe and focus on the race." Nacho Brooklyn, who apparently has had these problems many times before, begins to calm down. Off to the side, the head timekeeper calls a brief meeting, discussing the situation with the starter, Mr. Fraser, Mr. Crumpler, and Nacla Brocklin. In no uncertain terms, the head timekeeper explains to Mr. Crumpler, "We have a problem here. This is not the first time I've had to deal with your runner this year. Any further outbursts, and I will immediately eject your runner from the meet. Am I understood?" Mr. Crumpler replies, "Yes, sir. I sincerely apologize for his outburst." The head timekeeper turns toward Nacla Brocklin and asks, "Am I understood?" Nacla Brocklin replies, "Yeah. But he's messing up my race." The head timekeeper raises his voice, asking again, "Am I understood?" Nacla Brocklin replies, "Yeah. Okay, okay." After the 10-minute delay, the starter announces, "On your marks," then announces, "Set." The gun is fired, and the runners are out of the blocks. Eddie and Mark take an early lead. Hoffa is right up there with them. Several yards behind Hoffa is Nacla Brocklin, not having his greatest run. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, followed by Mark. Hoffa, 2 yards behind Mark, takes third place in this heat. Nacla Brocklin, taking fifth place, is not the least bit happy. Walking back to the bench, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa all clearly made the final. They are not so sure about Nacla Brocklin. But Nacla Brocklin's fuse has been lit, and he will likely detonate sometime during the meet. Hoffa, however, is more confident than ever that he can beat Nacla Brocklin. Eddie's, Mark's, and Hoffa's confidence grows as they sit back on the bench, watching the times delivered in the other heats as they are posted on the electronic scoreboard. After the preliminary heats of the men's 100-yard dash are finished, the women are up next in that event. At the starting line, Kathy, Paula, and Erica look around for anyone they might know. Seeing very few athletes they recognize, Kathy and Paula, now seniors who own this event, are carefully looked over by their competition. The runners get behind the blocks, waiting for the first heat to be called. Standing behind Kathy is a girl wearing number 1083, who comes up to her and asks, "Are you that girl, Kathy, who always wins?" Kathy replies, "If you're talking about the 100-yard dash, I guess that would be me." Number 1083, who is a freshman, tells Kathy, "I went to Riverdale. My ex-boyfriend in high school ran track, and I was there at one of the meets, watching. When I saw you run, I decided that I could run too. I just want to thank you. You've really inspired me." Kathy replies, "You're so welcome. And good luck." Number 1083 replies, "Thank you. It was so nice to finally meet you." As the event is about to get underway, number 1083 gets back into line. Paula tells Kathy, "She was kind of sweet." Kathy replies, "Yeah, I know. I hope she does well." Once everyone is lined up and ready to go, the starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set," as the runners get into the set position. The gun is fired and Kathy, Paula, and Erica, as they are leaving the blocks, all let out a primal scream that is heard throughout the stadium. Kathy and Paula quickly claim the lead, with no one remotely behind them. At the finish line, Kathy crosses first, only marginally beating Paula this year. And Erica, finishing right behind Paula, is hopeful that she will own this event next year. As they are walking back to the team bench, Kathy tells Paula and Erica, "Walk a little slower. I want to watch that girl run." The group slows down as Kathy wonders how competitive number 1083 is. As the second heat gets behind the blocks, number 1083 is in lane 4. The gun is fired, and number 1083 lets out a primal scream rivaling Kathy's. Running down her lane, number 1083 is clearly dominating this heat. At the finish line, number 1083 takes first place in her heat. Looking up at the scoreboard, Kathy mentions, 10.93. Not too bad for a freshman. Kathy then asks, "Didn't we hear an Amazon war cry during the winter divisionals?" Paula replies, "Yeah. We did. Kathy mentions, I bet it was her. The call is made for the men's 440-yard dash, which Braden has already announced that he will win. Braden heads over to the starting line along with Johnson, both dancing on the way and exclaiming in unison, gonna kick your ass, and land it in the grass. I'm gonna win, and your head is gonna spin. The gold is mine, and I'm gonna shine. Braden and Johnson's well-choreographed dance is attracting a lot of attention. If Braden and Johnson were on the football field, they would be penalized 15 yards for excessive celebration. In the stands, President Caldwell tells the group sitting with him, "This is one of my favorite events." Coach Herndon replies, "Of all the athletes I've ever coached, Axel Braden is, by far, my favorite. I've liked that guy since the first day I've met him." President Caldwell comments, "He certainly has a great level of confidence." Coach Herndon informs the administrators, "Axel Braden will win this event, and Johnson will take second place." Whether Bull places remains to be seen. Braden, in the first heat, gets behind the blocks in lane one. With a well-choreographed dance, Braden exclaims, "Gonna kick your ass, and land it in the grass. This race I'm gonna win, and then I'm gonna grin. This race is all mine, and I am gonna shine." Braden then exclaims, "Let's get this ass kicking over with." The starter, who has heard Braden's rants before, secretly enjoys the show. The starter announces, "Good luck to all of you. From what I am hearing, some of you may need it. On your marks," followed by, "Set." The gun is fired and Braden's ass kicking of the day is underway. Braden quickly claims the lead, but Johnson is not far behind. At the 220-yard mark, Braden, Johnson, and Bull have lost all their competition. Braden approaches the finish line, not slowing in the least. Crossing the finish line with a time of 44.91 seconds, Braden has set another personal record. In this heat, Johnson takes second place, and Bull takes third place. On the way back to the bench, Braden yells out, "I am the greatest ass kicker of all time." Braden's claim is heard 100 yards away by Mr. Fraser, who smiles, knowing that someone paid attention during his introductory address in January. Returning to the bench, Braden, Johnson, and Bull receive high fives from their coaches and teammates. Bull, who will be sitting at the edge of his seat during the subsequent heats, is very optimistic about his run. In the stands, President Caldwell comments to the group sitting with him, "So far, this morning, we've won the gold medal in every event." Dr. Karakova informs President Caldwell, "And here come two more gold medals. Eddie will win the men's 100-yard dash, and even if I do say so myself, Kathy will win the women's event." Then, there'll be a brief break for lunch. President Caldwell asks Dr. Karakova, "Has any team ever won the gold medal in every event?" Dr. Karakova replies, "Not that I know of. That's virtually unheard of in a divisional meet." Right before lunch, the call is made for the 100-yard dash final. Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa head to the starting line. Once again, they are up against Major Nacklo Brocklin, who is treading on very thin ice. Eddie asks Mark, "How are you going to take Nacklo Brocklin down? Have you thought of anything yet?" Mark replies, "I don't know. He's pretty riled up. Maybe he'll just self-destruct on his own before the race." Eddie whispers to Mark, "I have an idea. I'll tell you when we get to the blocks." Arriving at the starting blocks early, Mark sees that Nacklo Brocklin has been assigned to lane two, suggesting that his time was not among the fastest finalists. Talking with Eddie behind the blocks, Mark and Hoffa start laughing at a joke that Eddie just told, which is part of Eddie's plan to take Nacklo Brocklin down. Mark then catches Nacklo Brocklin staring at the group out of the corner of his eye, but completely ignores him for now. Thinking that Mark was laughing at him, Nacklo Brocklin becomes unhinged. Swiftly walking up behind Mark, Nacklo Brocklin yells out, "Why are you laughing at me? What's your problem?" Mark turns around, and Nakla Brocklin violently strikes Mark on the side of his head. Mark returns the favor, delivering a solid left uppercut to Nakla Brocklin's jaw. Nakla Brocklin goes down and, in no time, there are five officials in the area. Knocked out cold, Nakla Brocklin is finally not picking an argument with anyone. Mark tells the head timekeeper, "I told you. If he ever touches me, I'm ejecting him from the planet. Today was his lucky day." The head timekeeper pulls Mark aside. The other officials attend to Nakla Brocklin. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton run up, again wondering what the issue is. Seeing who is lying on the ground, Mr. Fraser, now quite angry, asks, "What happened this time?" The head timekeeper explains, "Your three athletes were talking together, laughing about something. The guy on the ground came up from behind, yelling, 'Why are you laughing at me? What's your problem?' He then struck your runner in the head who, in turn, leveled him." Mr. Fraser, seeing Nakla Brocklin on the ground, exclaims, "Get that guy out of here. Every meet he seems to cause this kind of shit." The head timekeeper asks Mark, "What were you guys laughing about?" Mark replies, "Eddie told us a joke, and we laughed. We weren't laughing at that paranoid asshole." The head timekeeper asks, "What was the joke?" Mark replies, "Eddie asked us, 'What's a dentist's favorite hymn?' So, me and Hoffa looked at each other and shrugged our shoulders. We didn't know. So, Eddie told us, 'Crown him with many crowns.' Eddie said he heard that one from Akinmola earlier today." Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and the head timekeeper also laugh, understanding why Mark and Hoffa were both laughing. As Nakla Brocklin's coach, Mr. Crumpler, arrives, the paramedics take Nakla Brocklin away, and the officials have a short meeting. Quite angry, Mr. Crumpler exclaims, "What in the world happened here? Somebody better have some good answers." The head timekeeper informs Mr. Crumpler, "Four officials, and myself, had a very close eye on your guy, Major Nakla Brocklin. Your guy seems to cause a commotion every meet." Mr. Crumple impatiently exclaims, "What happened?" The head timekeeper replies, "If you'll calm down, sir, I'll explain it to you. So, as I was saying, your guy lost it and attacked another runner. And, I might add, there was absolutely no provocation. So, I'm ejecting him from the meet. And my decision is final." Not happy with the head timekeeper's decision, Mr. Crumpler, pointing to Mark, exclaims, "How about this guy?" The head timekeeper explains, "He'll be running in the final, and any other event he is scheduled for." Mr. Crumpler exclaims, asking, "You're not ejecting him?" The head timekeeper replies, "No. Your runner started an altercation. He was already given a warning. Even if the other runner didn't retaliate, I would have still ejected your runner." Mr. Crumpler throws his hands into the air, mumbles a few obscenities, and walks back to his bench. The head timekeeper tells Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, "Honestly, I don't know what's wrong with that guy. I've officiated a few meets where he's been present. There's always some issue whenever he's around." Provost Layton explains, "There's something that needs to be understood. All of our athletes in the final are on full scholarship. They are very valuable to our university, and, I might add, we have a lot invested in them. The athlete who got attacked just now is running qualifying times for the Olympics. We simply cannot allow anything to happen to them." The head timekeeper replies, "I can fully understand that." The head timekeeper asks, "Is your guy okay to run, or should I delay the final until after the women run?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I'm sure he's ready. Let's get this over with." Seven of the eight finalists line up, with one being attended elsewhere by the paramedics. The starter announces, "This is the final for the 100-yard dash. Good luck to all seven of you. On your marks." The seven finalists get themselves positioned in the blocks. The starter announces, "Set." The gun is fired and the runners are off. Eddie and Mark are in the lead right out of the blocks. Hoffa is barely a step behind Mark. After 25 yards, Eddie and Mark break away, with Hoffa in third place. At 50 yards, Eddie breaks away, taking a slight lead. At the finish line, Eddie wins the gold medal, Mark wins the silver medal, and Hoffa wins the bronze medal. Had Nakla Brocklin been in the race, he would not have placed anyway. Seeing the times on the scoreboard, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa exchange high fives and fist bumps. Eddie's time of 9.15 seconds, Mark's time of 9.19 seconds, and Hoffa's time of 9.28 seconds are all qualifying times for the world stage. With Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa all being sophomores, no one else in the division stands a chance to place in this event during the next 2 years. Unless, of course, Eddie's brother John surprises everyone. In the stands, President Caldwell comments, "That's one more gold medal to the collection." Coach Herndon replies, "And one more on the way." President Caldwell asks Dean Grimsby, "Addison, you've been very quiet. Are you enjoying the meet?" Dean Grimsby replies, "Yes, yes. It appears we're doing very well." Dr. Karakova mentions, "We are." Mr. Fraser strongly believes we will win all the gold medals in this meet. And we're more than halfway there. Dean Grimsby asks, "All the gold medals?" Dr. Karakova replies, "Yes. All the gold medals." Quite impressive, isn't it? In response to Dr. Karakova's statement, Dean Grimsby begins hyperventilating and appears to be having a panic attack. Coach Herndon exclaims, "Dean Grimsby, are you okay?" Trying to calm down, as he is coughing, the dean replies, "Yes, yes. I'll be okay. I'm fine." Coach Herndon tells the dean, "You don't look too good. We really should call the paramedics." As he sweats profusely, the dean insists, "That won't be necessary. I'll be fine." Taking a drink of water, the dean finally calms down, but is apparently extremely stressed about something. Now that the drama of the men's 100-yard dash final is over, the call is made for the women's 100-yard dash final. This is the last time Kathy and Paula will be running this race in their collegiate career. Many of the athletes will be glad to see Kathy and Paula not return next year. But instead, they will have to deal with Erika and Tessa, as if that will be any better. And, this year, Erika has also made the final. Tessa, who runs during the winter season, is, at the moment, swimming in a swim meet across campus. Heading to the starting line, Kathy, Paula, and Erika are the top seeds. Joining them in the final is number 1083, who Kathy met in the preliminaries. Seeing number 1083 at the starting line, Kathy walks over and says, "Hey, you made it to the final." Number 1083 replies, "Yeah. I wasn't really expecting to make it this year. I'm so happy." Kathy asks, "What's your name?" Number 1083 replies, "Allison." Kathy tells Allison, "Well, it looks like we're about to get started. Good luck." The starter announces, "This is the final for the women's 100-yard dash. Good luck to all of you. On your marks." Once everyone is in place, the starter announces, "Set." The gun is fired, and four Amazon war cries, one of which is Allison's, announces the competition has begun. At 25 yards, Kathy is in the lead, with Paula right behind her. Erika, in third place, is not willing to give up an inch of her lead to the other runners. At 50 yards, Kathy and Paula fight it out for the lead. Erika closes in on Paula, but time is running out. As they approach the finish line, Kathy pulls farther ahead of Paula. Wanting to go out with the best time of her life, Kathy gives it all that she has. At the finish line, Kathy takes first place, Paula takes second place, and Erika takes third place. Allison, a freshman, takes fifth place. At the finish line, Kathy, Paula, and Erica all exchange high fives and victory hugs. Allison comes over to congratulate Kathy, telling her, "You won. Congratulations." Kathy asks Allison, "How did you do?" Allison replies, "I got fifth." Kathy tells her, "That's great. Next year, that might be second." Allison asks, "What do you mean?" Kathy explains, "Me and Paula are seniors. So is the girl that took fourth. We won't be back next year. So, next year you might place." Allison exclaims, "Awesome." Exchanging high fives, they all head back to their benches. On the scoreboard, Kathy's time comes in at 10.49 seconds, surpassing her performance of last year and setting a new divisional record. Paula's time is 10.53 seconds, and Erica's time is 10.67 seconds. From the looks of things, Erica will be the number one seed in this event next year. But, during the indoor track season, Tessa will certainly present a challenge. Over in the administrative box, President Caldwell mentions, "I'm quite amazed at how good our track team is." Dr. Karakova replies, "Many of the relays are in the afternoon. We're really strong in those events." Coach Herndon adds, "George is confident that we'll take the gold medal in all the relay events. In fact, George told me many times that he wants all the gold medals today. Honestly, our only weakness is the high jump." Dean Grimsby asks, "We're not good in the high jump." Coach Herndon replies, "Not exactly. Unless something has changed, we're probably not going to take that event." Dean Grimsby sits back and relaxes, glancing over at the field events area. With a break in the action, the officials can finally get a bite to eat. Dr. Karakova poses the question to those in the administrator's box, "Does anyone have any idea what will happen if the university takes all the gold medals, or close to it?" President Caldwell responds, "That would certainly bring the university a lot of positive attention within the division." Dr. Karakova replies, "Yes, it would. But if George and his coaching staff pull this off, every high school track athlete who wants to run in college will be applying to our university. We would certainly be on the top of their list. We all know that potential students compete for a place in a college or university. But we have to remember that our university also competes for the best students. If George pulls this off, we will have first choice at the best athletes." President Caldwell quickly surmises, "That would be somewhat analogous to our university getting all the first-round draft picks." Dr. Karakova replies, "Exactly. Whenever a college or university wins a championship, every superstar high school athlete in that sport is seriously looking at that school." President Caldwell immediately understands why Provost Layton fought so hard to get George Fraser on the coaching staff at the university. When the women return to the bench, everyone gives Kathy, Paula, and Erica a high five. Provost Layton gives the women a hug, the gesture of which indicates to Dean Grimsby that Kathy is neither on disciplinary probation nor suspended from the track team. Eddie gives Kathy a big victory hug and kiss, knowing that this is her last meet in college competition. Now, with a 30-minute break, the tribe heads to the cafeteria for a light lunch. After lunch, the call is made for the men's 1-mile run. Today, it's anybody's guess whether Mitchell, Stone, or Akinmola will win. This year, Mitchell has no strategical plan. Everyone is on their own. But even with no plan, each of the 3-milers knows each other's strategy and exactly how the others run. At the starting line, Mitchell and Stone look around, seeing no one who will pose a problem this year. Mitchell, however, notices John McNamara, who used to run for Centerville. Mitchell comments to Stone and Akinmola, "It looks like it's going to be a 3-man race." Akinmola replies, "It's going to be a 1-man race, my friend. You guys can fight it out for second place." Stone answers Akinmola's predication by saying, "I think he might be right. It'll be a 1-man race. Me? I am going to win. The starter tells the runners to get into position. Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone exchange high fives and are ready to battle it out. The runners are positioned, with Mitchell, the number one seed, assigned to the inside position. Next to Mitchell is Stone. Next to Stone is Akinmola. The starter announces, set. The gun is fired, and the title of the fastest distance man in the division will be decided in less than 4 minutes. At 50 yards, Stone is in the lead. Mitchell drops in right behind Stone, and Akinmola drops in behind Mitchell. Fresh in the three runners' minds is Mr. Fraser's belief that the mile is just a 440-yard dash with a three-quarter-mile warm-up. After the first quarter mile, no positional changes occur among the three front runners, but they are clearly leading and distancing themselves from the other runners. Just past the half-mile mark, Stone expects Mitchell to make a move, but he does not. Instead, surprising everyone, Akinmola passes Mitchell and Stone, assuming the lead. Following closely, Stone drafts off of Akinmola, a position Mitchell dearly wants. Waiting for an opening, Mitchell is planning to make a move, but, during the third lap, no opportunity comes. On the last lap, Akinmola steps up his pace. Stone follows suit, continuing to draft off of the 6 foot, 3 inch tall Akinmola. Mitchell finally makes a move and attempts to pass Stone. Stone will have nothing to do with it and passes Akinmola, which he was planning to do sometime soon. Stone assumes the lead as Mitchell follows closely on Stone's heels. Akinmola, allowing the others to do the work, drops in and drafts off Mitchell. With 100 yards to go, it is a three-way sprint to the finish. Benefiting from drafting off Akinmola, Stone finds a reserve of energy and pulls ahead. At the finish, Stone takes first place today. Mitchell and Akinmola fight it out for second place, but, with a burst of energy at the end, Mitchell beats out Akinmola by less than 1 second. With three world-class performances, the three-milers head back to the team bench. After recovering from his run, Mitchell looks up at the scoreboard, seeing that Stone ran a 3:55.13. Mitchell, disappointed with his time of 3:56.42, knows his performance was not his best. Akinmola came in with a time of 3:57.21, a far better performance than he expected a year ago. And McNamara, who Mitchell has defeated many times in the past, finishes toward the end of the pack. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton congratulate the three-milers, who receive high fives from everyone at the bench. Provost Layton whispers to Stone, "That was the best run of your life. You did great." Stone replies, "I broke through my barrier." Finally, Stone, whose performances have been in the four-minute range, now clearly understands that the training afforded by Mr. Fraser is what helped him break through his barrier, as he put it. Akinmola, somewhat ticked off that he did not win, vows to take the gold medal in the high jump event later today. Mr. Fraser advises Akinmola to cool off, recover, and rehydrate before he heads over to the field events area. Following the mile, the call is made for the men's mile medley relay. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, in the first heat, head to the starting line. Mark, the leadoff man, gets on the track. Looking around, Mark sees Nakla Brocklin is nowhere in sight. Once the runners are ready and set, the starter fires the gun. The runners are out of the blocks, and Mark is hopefully off to securing another gold medal. Watching Mark as he approaches the transition zone, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "It looks like you're on your way to getting your wish." Mr. Fraser asks, "What's that?" Provost Layton replies, "So far, our team has secured all the gold medals in the track events. And we're really close in the field events." Mr. Fraser explains, "With this team, half their problem was motivation. Most of them were satisfied with taking fourth place. I really detest fourth place." Provost Layton reassures Mr. Fraser, It looks like they all detest fourth place now, too. Eddie receives the baton from Mark, inheriting nearly a 4-second lead. Up against only the clock, Eddie increases the lead, as Braden is exclaiming, "Give me that baton. I got asses to kick. Run, run, run. I wanna have some fun." All fired up today, Braden is anxiously waiting for his leg to begin. Eddie hands off to Braden, and President Caldwell, along with Coach Herndon, move to the edge of their seats. Both President Caldwell's and Coach Herndon's favorite team member, they pay close attention as Braden widens the lead for Johnson, who will be up next. Braden, like Eddie, is running against the clock. President Caldwell asks Dr. Karakova, "Let me see if I understand this. We have what? A half dozen athletes running competitive times for the Olympics." Thinking about the answer, Dr. Karakova replies, "More than that. Our three-milers are running world-class performances. There are the four guys on this relay team. And there are Kathy, Paula, and Erika. And we certainly can't leave out Robert Bradshaw in the shot put and Eddie in the discus. The rest of the team is also looking very strong today." Braden hands off to Johnson, who has been handed a significant lead along with the baton. The administrators sit back and relax, while Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton watch impatiently as Johnson runs the half-mile leg. Unexpectedly, Officer Hayes comes over to the team bench, joining Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton. Officer Hayes asks Mr. Fraser, "So, how's it going, coach?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Great. We've won all the gold medals so far. I couldn't be happier with the team's performance today." Officer Hayes asks, "Do you still think you'll win all the gold medals?" Mr. Fraser replies, "If Akinmola can take the high jump, then yes. I think we have a good shot at it." Officer Hayes asks, "Has this Akinmola guy jumped yet?" Mr. Fraser explains, "He ran the mile a little while ago. The high jump competition starts shortly. He'll be fully recovered by then. I plan to send Akinmola and Eddie over to the field area to check in after the women's mile medley." Officer Hayes, who has come to know the team members well, is quite impressed that the team is doing so well. Johnson crosses the finish line, with the team taking first place in their heat. Johnson and the rest of the acclaimed 4x440 relay team, now also dominating the mile medley relay, head back to the team bench together. Although there are other heats to run, the relay team celebrates yet another victory, winning by quite a significant margin. Immediately after the men's mile medley relay, the call is made for the women's mile medley relay. Kathy, Paula, Erika, and Amber, in the first heat, head to the starting line. Expected to win this event, as they did over the entire season, the women's mile medley team is ready for the final victory of the year. With Paula in the blocks and holding the baton, the starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The gun is fired, and Paula takes off, letting out a loud Amazon war cry. Assuming the lead in her leg, Paula hands off to Kathy, who also announces the beginning of her leg with an Amazon war cry. Kathy widens the lead and hands off to Erika. Erika, also letting out an Amazon war cry, announces to everyone in the stadium that the university's baton has again changed hands. Running an awesome leg, Erika hands off to Amber. Surprising everyone, Amber also lets out an Amazon war cry, her first in competition. At the end of her first lap, it appears Amber has the race wrapped up, but another runner is gaining on her. As they approach the finish, there is not enough time for the other runner to catch Amber, who takes first place. The relay team members exchange hugs and head to the team bench, knowing they've again won the gold medal. While the other mile medley relay heats are underway, Mr. Fraser sends Eddie and Akinmola over to the field area. Eddie and Akinmola check in with the head field judge, who places them into the rotation. The high jump event, which has not yet begun, has been delayed because a few of the runners, including Akinmola, also participate in this event. Taking a seat next to Bobby B, Eddie asks, "Did you win?" Bobby B laughs, replying, "Of course." Cinquegrana and Mendenhall are battling it out for the silver medal. "It looks like we swept the event." Eddie asks, "What happened to that other guy that Cinquegrana messed with during the winter divisional meet?" Bobby B explains, "You mean the Attaway. He's here, but Cinquegrana is better than him now. Cinquegrana, a junior, has come a long way in the last year." Dr. Bonomo, the field coach, tells Eddie, "You're up. The best throw today is around 192 feet. Eddie smiles, knowing that he can easily surpass that distance. Stepping up to the discus pad, Eddie looks around, noticing that many people are watching. Going into the wind-up and into the spin, Eddie releases the discus, letting out a primal scream borrowed from the Amazon women. All eyes are on the discus as it takes its time soaring through the air, finally landing right around the 225-foot mark. The field judges take the measurement, and Eddie's throw comes in at 226 feet, 8 inches. Eddie sits around relaxing and talks to Bobby B and Akinmola as he is waiting for his next throw. While they are waiting, the high jump event begins. Although he has not participated in this event in competition for a while, Akinmola remains very confident. Eddie reminds Akinmola, "If you take this, we just might win all the gold medals." Akinmola energetically reminds Eddie, "I hear last winter, the winner jumped 6.5 feet. I can jump 7 feet. Do you understand what I am saying, my friend?" Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. You're saying you already won." Akinmola is called for his first jump. Studying the venue carefully, Akinmola looks at the bar as he starts his approach. With a 12-step approach, the 6-foot, 3-inch Akinmola carefully times his jump. Accelerating rapidly, Akinmola makes the turn as he approaches the bar. Using the technique known as the Fastbury flop, Akinmola thrusts upward, easily clearing the 5-foot, 6-inch initial height by more than 1 foot. Akinmola is now convinced more than ever that he can win the high jump. Eddie is called to make his second attempt at the discus. Dr. Bonomo has assured Eddie that he has already won, but Eddie is after a personal record in the event. Stepping up to the discus pad, Eddie is completely unaware that he is, again, attracting a lot of attention. Eddie goes into his wind-up and into the spin, releasing the discus with more force than he ever has. The discus soars through the air, again landing past the 225-foot mark. The field judges take the measurement, which comes in at 227 feet, 2 inches. Hearing the measurement, Eddie exclaims, "Yes," as he heads back to the bench. Eddie takes a seat on the bench, where Bobby B tells him, "That's not too bad for tossing a frisbee." Not missing a beat, Eddie asks, "How far did you throw the softball today?" Bobby B replies, 69 feet, 10 inches. Eddie gives Bobby B a high five and exclaims, "Wow. Bro. You're catching up to Erika." Bobby B's throw today represents the best of his career. As they are talking, Eddie hears the call for the 220-yard dash. Telling Dr. Bonomo that his event has been called, Eddie heads to the starting line, where he will meet up with Mark and Davida. Dr. Bonomo tells Eddie that he will come and get him if he is required to make another throw. Eddie, Mark, and Davida meet up at the starting line, where Nakla Brocklin is again conspicuously missing. With no one to mess with to raise his adrenaline levels, Mark tells Eddie, "It's too bad Nakla Brocklin isn't here to get me fired up." Imitating Nakla Brocklin's tone, Eddie responds, "What you mean? You messing up my name. My name is Eddie. You messing up my race and my name." The starter, who is nearby, laughs, secretly happy that he does not have to deal with Nakla Brocklin anymore today. The starter announces, "On your marks," then announcing, "Set." The gun is fired, and Eddie, Mark, and Davida all let out a primal scream, which seems to distract the competition a bit. A few steps out of the blocks, Eddie and Mark take the lead. Davida, who has improved much over the last year, is in a strong third place. Halfway through the race, Eddie and Mark are head-to-head. Approaching the finish line, Mark takes a slight lead over Eddie. This time, Mark crosses first, and Eddie takes second place. Not far behind is Davida, taking third place in this heat. It is not likely that anyone in the subsequent heats will beat Davida's time. While the men's track events move on to the 4x110 relay, the bar at the high jump has been raised to 6 feet, 9 inches. Three contestants remain, Akinmola being among them. Over at the expensive seats, Dean Grimsby has his eyes on the high jump. Watching as Akinmola successfully makes the 6-foot, 9-inch jump, Dean Grimsby asks, "Who is that, over there, high jumping for our university?" Coach Herndon looks over, answering, "That's Adekunle Akinmola. He's one of our star distance runners. He came in third in the mile earlier." Dean Grimsby asks, "Is he allowed to run and do the high jump too?" Coach Herndon replies, "Of course he is. The coach is allowed to make last-minute substitutions right up to the start of the event. Substituting a less qualified or more qualified runner at the last minute is exactly what Dr. Paxton was doing when he was rigging the events. By making the last-minute substitution, Dr. Paxton was able to change the outcome of the event, invalidating the initial odds, thus paving the way for a large payout. With one jumper out and two remaining, the bar is raised to 6 feet, 11 inches. With his eyes glued to the high jump bar, Dean Grimsby watches nervously as Akinmola makes his first attempt at this height. More confident now than before, Akinmola approaches the bar, thrusts upward, clearing the 6-foot, 11-inch bar by a few inches. With no excitement, Dean Grimsby mumbles, "He made it." Coach Herndon exclaims, "He just might take it." Number 768, the other remaining high jump competitor, makes his first attempt at this height. Approaching the bar, number 768 thrusts upward, flies upward toward the bar, taking the bar down to the mat with him. Dean Grimsby asks, "He missed. Does that mean we won?" Coach Herndon replies, "No. He gets three attempts. If he misses his next two, we won. If he makes it, they'll raise the bar." Coach Herndon is, for some reason, somewhat annoyed by Dean Grimsby's questions. Dean Grimsby watches as number 768 makes and fails at his second attempt. With a break in the action, Mr. Fraser jogs over to the field events area, getting an update from Dr. Bonomo. Hoping for good news, Mr. Fraser asks Dr. Bonomo, "What do we got?" Dr. Bonomo succinctly explains, "We swept the shot put. Eddie won the discus. We took first in everything so far, and a few second places on top of that. This is 768's last attempt. When he misses, we'll win this event too." Dr. Bonomo sounds very confident that Akinmola has clinched the high jump. Mr. Fraser and Dr. Bonomo watch as number 768 makes his third and final attempt at 6 feet, 11 inches. Approaching the bar, number 768 thrusts upward and brushes the bar on his way up. The bar falls to the ground, greeting the high jumper at the mat with a silver medal. Akinmola, who takes the gold medal in the high jump, jumps up and down in excitement, receiving high fives from Mr. Fraser and Dr. Bonomo. With the field events now over, Mr. Fraser, Dr. Bonomo, Akinmola, and the rest of the field team head over to the team bench. The call is made for the final event of the afternoon, which is the men's 4x440 relay, and the entrants head to the starting line. 12 teams will compete in 2 heats of 6. The first heat brings the higher-seeded teams, including Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, who are assigned to lane 1. Looking around, Mark still sees no sign of Nakla Brocklin. Mark asks the head timekeeper, "Whatever happened to that crazy guy?" The head timekeeper explains, when he regained consciousness, he started yelling, "They are all messing up my race, and they are messing up my name." They had to take him to the hospital. He really lost it. Seizing the moment, Mark tells the head timekeeper, "I told you guys that he's psycho." The head timekeeper agrees, telling Mark, "Believe me. We know." Apparently, Necla Brocklin has crumbled under the stress he has incurred by not winning. The lead-off men get behind the blocks, and the starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The gun is fired, and the lead-off men are out of the blocks. Eddie gets right on the track and enters the transition zone, knowing that Mark will arrive in 45 seconds or so. After 100 yards, there is no question that Mark is in the lead. Over in the administrator's box, Dr. Karakova comments, "If we win this event, the university will take first place in every event." Dean Grimsby exclaims, "Do you mean, this is the last event?" Dr. Karakova replies, "Well, yes. And I strongly suspect we will win it. This relay team has never lost a race." Dean Grimsby verifies, "And we won all the gold medals in this meet so far." President Caldwell proudly replies, "It sure does look that way." As Mark passes the baton to Eddie, Dean Grimsby pays close attention to the race. While Eddie is running his leg, Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton want to start an early celebration, but they patiently wait until the race is over. Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "George, back in the winter, you mentioned to me that, in the spring, you want all the gold medals. I remember telling you, that's an immense load to put yourself under. Wow. Was I ever wrong?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I knew they could do it. They put in the work. Today, they reap the rewards. And, best of all, they've all learned that they can win." As Eddie hands off to Johnson, Mr. Fraser glances down at his stopwatch and smiles, knowing his team is having a good run. Braden gets on the track, dancing and exclaiming, "Here we go. The final ass kicking of the year. Give me that baton, and let me get it on. Mark, Eddie, Johnson, it looks like we all won. Gonna kick an ass, and land it in the grass." President Caldwell and Coach Herndon turn their focus from Johnson to Braden, enjoying his pre-performance choreographed rants. Johnson delivers the baton to Braden, and Braden takes off like a wild man. During Braden's leg, Officer Hayes joins Mr. Fraser and Coach Layton. Officer Hayes asks Mr. Fraser, "Now, let me get this straight, Coach. Your team won the gold medal in every event today." Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "In 30 seconds, when Braden crosses that finish line, yes. We will have won all the gold medals." On his way to the finish line, all eyes are on Braden. With a composite time of 2 minutes, 59.77 seconds, Braden crosses the finish line, sealing today's enormous victory. Seeing Braden take first place, Officer Hayes congratulates Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and Dr. Bonamo. The team begins celebrating an enormous and unprecedented victory. The end of the meet brings the awards ceremony, which Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton are really looking forward to. At the team bench, a huge celebration ensues with high fives, fist bumps, and hugs exchanged by all team members. The meet announcer introduces today's officials and recognizes the coaches and athletes for their participation today. After the administrative announcements are made, the presentation of the awards then begins. As the awards are being distributed, Captain Gabriel and Detective Garrison come down from the stands and meet up with Officer Hayes. Officer Hayes tells Captain Gabriel, "It sure looks like Erica ran really good today. You must be proud of her." Captain Gabriel replies, "I am. This has been her best meet since she started running." Detective Garrison mentions, "I really had my doubts that the university would take all the gold medals. But they did it." Officer Hayes responds, "Well, we did have some inside information. Mr. Fraser, Officer Braden, Erica, and a few of the guys were all echoing the same charge. They were all pretty confident. As Stone steps up to receive his gold medal in the mile, Provost Layton has to turn away to conceal her tears of happiness. It's not the fact that Stone won is what the Provost is happy with. It's his time. Stone's time of 3:55.13 represents not only the best run of his life, but his first competitive run worthy of a place on the world stage. At the end of the awards ceremony, as the acclaimed 4x440 relay team walks toward the podium to receive their gold medals, Mark mentions to the group, "I saw McCrutchen up in the stands with his father and his brother. I wonder what they are doing here." Braden suggests, "The only way McCrutchen won't get his ass kicked is by staying off the track." Eddie points out, "Not really, bro. You kicked his ass when he broke into Mark's locker." Braden replies, "Oh, yeah. I did. I forgot about that." Eddie also reminds Braden, "And I think you tossed him into the ocean during Mark's wedding." Braden laughs and replies, "McCrutchen is always getting his ass kicked. When McCrutchen wakes up in the morning, he probably looks in the mirror and asks himself, I wonder how I'm gonna get my ass kicked today." The group laughs, but must now behave themselves as they walk up to receive their award. Standing on the first place tier, Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden receive the last gold medal of the meet. Returning to the team bench, the 4x440 relay team is informed by Kathy that everyone is going out for pizza, which is no big surprise. The team poses for a few photographs with the winners' medals draped around their necks. In between shots, Provost Layton mentions to Mr. Fraser, "In all my life, I've never seen a track team this good." Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "You put a lot of work into this team. Today, we see the results." Another photograph is taken, then Provost Layton asks Mr. Fraser, "What do you mean?" "They did the work." Mr. Fraser explains, "The women's 4x220 relay team won by less than 1 second. You worked very closely with Karen, Amanda, and a few of the other women to get their handoffs perfected. That was the difference between the gold medal and silver medal in that event today." Provost Layton is very appreciative that Mr. Fraser notices details, such as the one he just pointed out. Provost Layton did not see the direct connection between her coaching and the women's 4x220 relay team winning the gold medal today. After the photographs, the team heads to the locker rooms to change, and then it's off to the pizzeria.